This is the ISG Digital Dish.
Welcome to the Digital Dish,
a podcast for women's voices and perspectives in the digital world. I'm Lois.
I'm Missy.
And I'm Jeannie. And we want to make sure smart women and their points of view were being heard. Hey. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back, Lois.
Hi, Jeannie. How are you today?
I'm good. Well, we're just introducing you to a pretty amazing interview with Annika Sharma. As usual, we were just joking about how Missy is connected to everything. And this is like the perfect example. I got to say, Annika talks great stuff. She talks about retail, but she takes it into how you can use AI and all these different data points to get to what you're trying to sell and things like that. So it's really an interesting journey. She's amazing. But I have to tell you two things. She talks about perfume the way I talk about wine.
Oh, well, okay. You've got me intrigued on that. What does that mean?
I know, right? It's really interesting. I mean, I'm like not the perfumey person because I sneeze from everything, but her perfume, it's like, oh yeah, I feel that way about wine.
Well, this will be an interesting sort of topic or a way that
exactly
she describes that. Okay.
I literally, when I produced it and I was on the interview, I just listened. I took a couple of notes. So that was one thing I really took away. And the other one I took away was she talks about how the young people in peer groups are influencing brands in the retail industry. And she talks about luxury brands and stuff, talking about how digital helps them to catch up faster to remain relevant. I had a hilarious experience with my daughter where I was using some kind of Clinique lip balm. And then I was using Trader Joe's sunblock. And my daughter's like, oh, these are the hottest things out there. I had no idea. But she was like, this is so hot.
So you were a trendsetter before you even knew you were a trendsetter, huh?
Exactly. It's amazing. I'm like blown away.
You know, I'm excited to hear this because I think just we personally are seeing and feeling how, whether it's our children who are much more in tune to what's going on, but how, you know, I even find myself getting pulled into things or just seeing, you know, some of the changes that are happening that is changing my behaviors without even realizing it's changing my behaviors until you look back and say, oh, I never used to do it that way. Now I do it differently. So,
right.
Yeah, I'm kind of interesting to hear what she has to say.
So I'm excited for you to hear this because I think you will really enjoy it. And then we'll talk about it afterwards. So everybody enjoy listening to Annika Sharma. And she talks about basically retail stuff. So it's metaverse and makeup. Enjoy.
Hello, hello, hello. That was kind of like the Matthew McConaughey, all right, all right, all right. We have an incredible guest today. Jeannie and Lois are going to be so excited because of a very near, dear partner, provider, colleague of ours. I will allow her to introduce herself, but I just have to talk about how we actually met. It was at, I want to say, one of our digital conferences. It might have been our Secure Intelligent Connected Enterprise or Digital Business Summit or something like that, almost a year ago, at least in the heart of the summer, in the spring of last year, I know by that time. There was an amazing talk on a major brand that focuses on luxury cosmetics. And if anyone knows anything about me, that is totally my jam. But that's not just my personality. I tend to be a bit more androgynous. Played to all the sports my whole life, and literally coming into this, I'm coming straight from the gym, but I always think I should put on a little lipstick. So I'm just wondering how many of our listeners, how many women feel that need to get dressed? Men can maybe, I'm going to make an assumption here, roll out of bed, throw on a polo, turn on their camera, be ready to go. I cannot. My hair will look crazy. My bag's under my eyes. So this topic of the makeup plus the metaverse is, I thought, really cool to combine some things that are seemingly disparate. But for women, these complexities are just a normal part of our daily lives. So not only as the users and the end users and the consumers of both the makeup and drivers of the metaverse, but also just thinking about our own day in the life. So without any further ado, Anika Sharma.
Thank you, Missy. Thank you so much. It's really lovely to be here. My name is Anika. In the day in the life of Anika, I handle some really large scale CPG and retail clients. And by CPG, I mean consumer goods. Into the next, I should say, avatar of digital growth. To me, these are brands that really need saving. These are brands that make us look good, feel good, talk good, walk good. It's almost like I feel like a vested interest in trying to save them, right? Or doing my bit, right? I'm not a doctor. I don't save anyone's life. Don't deliver anyone's baby. This is the closest I will come to doing something, right? If I can help save a brand that I grew up with, I think that's going to be my way of thinking that I have done my bit on planet Earth. I love the subject so much that I teach it, right? I write it, I walk it, I talk it. And then now I'm actually also doing a PhD on luxury retail.
What?
Basically, this is a public announcement to tell everybody that I will not be shutting up anytime soon on this subject. So that's me. I'm a resident of the East Coast, which means that Hustle is my middle name. And I'm really excited to talk about this today, especially to somebody who obviously, you know, is passionate about the subject. And of course, it's relevant to us because, you know, 6 to 8 out of every $10 are spent in retail. 6 out of every 10 people are in jobs in retail in the Americas. So it's a pretty big subject. It's a pretty big part of our economy. And I think, you know, it's our job to make sure that these brands and companies continue to remain relevant.
You said some brands need saving. What do you mean by need saving?
So I'm a huge fan of Chanel. I love Chanel perfume. You know, you talk about wearing a lipstick and feeling the almost like the pressure to wear lipstick. I would reposition it and say, is the empowerment of wearing a lipstick? You know, who would have thought that confidence could come in as little as $6, right? And continue the gift that keeps on giving, right? It's going to be lipstick that you will wear for the next 6 months, at least if you wear it every day, right? So $6 for 6 months of confidence, I will pay for it and I will sign up, right? So you talk about brands that not saving. I think that in a world where loyalty is a mirage, I think if we really love our brands, right, especially as consumers who are today multi-brand loyal. So what do I mean by that? Meaning in my basket of brands, the Chanel sits right next to the Lancome, sits right next to Prada, sits right next to Dolce & Gabbana. And I feel like telling everyone to play nice in the sandbox, right? These are all brands that I love and all brands that make me feel so empowered that I can walk into a conference room and say, all right, let's talk business, right? So it's not that I don't love one the most, but it's like I love all of them. So it's almost like as a luxury consumer, as a consumer, I have a basket of brands that fit that. The job of the company or the brand is to make sure that they have the largest share of the basket, but I don't think they can have the only share of the basket, right? And I'm saying that as a person who loves these brands, I come from branding all my life, I've come from advertising, I've come from MarTech all my life, and now technology. I do believe that it's our job to make sure that the brands that we love, that we do our bit for it, right? So we do our bit for it by buying it, right? By talking about it, by advocating it, by introducing our best friends to it, long before Instagram made influencers ooh-la-la, right? You know, we were already, Instagram just basically officialized, I think, the advocacy route, right? But otherwise, women have been known to go up to someone and say, girl, you should totally buy that. That's like so cool. Mm-hmm. Go to this place, visit that place, go to that store. Here is something that you should know about. Here is a cool little hangout place in New York. So we've been doing it all our life. It's our second skin. We now just have a larger platform to do it on, right? So by saving, I mean, if there's a brand that you love and it's a brand that makes you feel better, it's our moral responsibility to do something about it, right? So, you know, Lancome is one of them, Prada is one of them. Chanel for me is huge. Tomorrow, if I come to know the brand is not doing well or for whatever reason it needs an extra push, well, trust me, I will be right there.
So I love that you've given us the brands too, because we were talking not only consumer packaged goods, CPG and retail, but specifically you're hitting on luxury. And I know that sometimes some people can hear that and think, consumerism or capitalistic or whatever it may be. But what's your take on that with today's personas, the buyers of today? And how does digital even play into that? Because you think luxury and it feels a bit older. Like I love my Hermes scarves and those perfumes, but also now Chanel's rebranding and they're trying to reach a different demographic. So how does digital play into that?
Yeah. So that's very interesting, right? I want to address two things. One is I love how you said Chanel's playing to a different demographic. I actually would twist it again and say, I think the brands are catching up with the demographics that are buying them, right? So if you really look at, for example, the South Asian consumer or the Asian consumer that you're now seeing, you pick up a Vogue and they're full, every brand has that. Yes. Not only are they there, but they're also younger, you know? So they're also like school-going kids or just about to go to college kids. So obviously the brands have understood that if you get them young, you'll be able to hold on to them much longer. You'll also introduce them to brands at the right time. And here's the time when peer groups and peer pressure is very high, right? So if you have someone who is an influencer of sorts and brands, someone who everyone else looks up to in a peer group, then that's the right time to get in. So my hypothesis on that front is that it's not that the brands are now targeting these groups. I think the brands are catching up with the groups that are already buying them. And the only caveat I would put over there is, I think the brands are a few years too late. So again, my second learning on that is, by the time you catch up, they've already moved on. There's already another demographic that is buying it, right? So the time lapse between the ones that you're representing in your campaigns and the ones who are actually buying it, I think is a few years. And I've never said this before, so the first podcast to hear it, but that's my aha moment. And I think brands, if they're not careful, will have to catch up really soon. And by the way, the question on what can digital do, it can help you catch up faster, right? Because catching up faster means you'll be more relevant. And being more relevant means that you will help the people who love you. You, the brand, can help the people who love you remain relevant and help you remain relevant, right? So I will only be loyal and be an advocate of you as long as you understand what I need, as long as you're there for me like a best friend, right?
Yes.
And as long as you understand my changing needs. That is the very definition of a brand and the very definition of a best friend. The role that digital can play is to ensure that it continues to remain relevant in the way that I would like it to be, because I'm a changing person. I think in coming back to the demographic, just circling back on that conversation, is that I think the brands are catching up with the people who are buying them. And I do believe that they're still not representing the people who are buying them. They're still a few years apart. The demographic has already moved.
Yes.
So what they need to do is go to the stores and stand there and look at the people who are buying them and understand that behavior and watch it, you know, and come back. Go back to being secret shopping and come back.
Yes. Well, I'm all about enterprise agility and getting IT and digital technology connected closer to the consumers and shifting them to the left in the world of plan and then build and then run. So your IT developers are actually sitting right there with kind of like your UX, UI teams and understanding the voice of the buyer. So that's incredible. It's an agile principle, but really it's just a human principle and component for representation and diversity and data and how data can actually help provide those insights that you're talking about to actually help digital help them catch up faster.
And I think the problem over there, Missy, is that they're all working in the swim lanes, right? So the people who are collecting the data are not the people who are getting the reports out. The people who are getting the reports out are not the people who are reading it. The people who are reading it are not really the ones who are implementing it. They're just reading it and summarizing it and coming back. So it's so disparate already, right? So to your point of what you said about being human, I think people are realizing that you need to be human-centric. Long ago, when I used to handle Unilever, long ago, 20 years ago, Unilever made this amazing decision to make sure that their marketing team sat right next to the research and development teams. And let me tell you, the amazing part of the decision was that they moved their cool marketing team from the cool marketing offices and moved them to the very not-so-cool research and development section.
They are the cool kids, too.
Exactly. But R&D people are like, all right, they don't really need the cool offices and the cool coffee machines. But guess what? It was the best thing, because the moment the marketing teams came up with an idea, they literally walk across the room, not even the hall, and say, hey, do you think it's possible?
Yes.
Like, I remember we were looking at an exfoliating soap and we were talking about it, or sensorial. And, you know, the teams were like, sure, we can do this. This is how you can do this. And within a couple of days, they had prototypes.
Wow.
So it was the best thing about the two in the box, right?
Yes.
So to your point, both of them were working towards just one person, me, the consumer, right? Or you, the consumer. I do believe that today you do need to ensure that those teams are working together towards one objective. And I think in many ways, those organizations are called market-oriented organizations, right? So they are not marketing-oriented, but they are market-oriented. What does that mean? That they cater to the markets. And by markets, it means consumers. And by markets, again, it means different kinds of consumers, right? Because the market you might have in the Americas might be different than the one that you have in Asia, might be different than the one you have in the Middle East, especially as a global brand. So the moment you're a market-oriented organization, what you're really doing is you're making sure that your R&D looks at you know, the end consumer in the market. Your tech looks at the end consumer in the market. Your CDMO's office looks at the end consumer, right? Your digital looks at your end consumer. It is everyone's job to make sure that they are selling or catering to Missy's Red Lipstick and catering to Anika's, you know, perfume, right?
Yes.
Which is the way it should be. It sounds so simple and so basic and so fundamental, but I would really love for us to take a step back and say, how many Fortune 500 companies are doing this today? And I think we will struggle to come up with more than a handful.
Mm-hmm. We've definitely seen it at advisory consulting in adaptive organizations, which is where I sit within ISG, and enterprise operating models and things of that nature, where we've been saying for decades that this is the way of the future, but it's also the way of now. I just think that we can take some cues and lessons from consumers and retails and CPG and the industry in particular, because you literally have consumerism in it. Whereas some of the other industries, maybe that's not necessarily the case. You know, healthcare and life sciences, perhaps, but it's all ultimately for humans and for people. But in digital and technology and IT, we think of the technology and the tools themselves, and then maybe the processes, and then the people and the humans.
Yeah. And I do want to talk about the luxury thing that you spoke about, people going, oh, well, do we really have the luxury to, no pun intended, speak about it today. But I think we do, right? So one of the other things that I came across, we spoke about market oriented, which I really think is a really, really, really big idea that still is trying to find its place under the sun. And I think organizations to think about, especially tech first organizations, right? I mean, tech induced organizations, because it's easier to be enabled when you are tech infused, right? Because you have the force of tech behind you. The second thing I want to talk about is this whole thing of revenge buying, right? It's called revenge buying. I didn't come up with the term, but you'll hear it a lot. And it's associated with YOLO, right? Which, by the way, my teenagers told me is you only live once.
Right, YOLO.
The reason I wanted to speak about that is because it was a very interesting study that happened during Hurricane Katrina. Right after Hurricane Katrina, people started spending in ways that were not rational, right? You come out of a big event that has happened that has impacted you, and your natural instinct should be to save, your natural instinct should be to be there for another hurricane. But what people started doing was spend like there was no tomorrow. The event was again seen after COVID, when the Louis Vuitton store opened and there were lines around, longer than the iPhone lines, right? So around the block when the store opened, and they had their single largest day of sales, right? And it was called revenge buying because people said, well, you haven't allowed us to come out and you haven't allowed us to buy, right? And you haven't allowed us to come in and have the store experience. So guess what? They're going to take all our money and we're going to spend like we're not going to live tomorrow. Obviously, the happiest person was Louis Vuitton. Hopefully, you know, they didn't run out of inventory, right? But it's really interesting because brands and companies are trying to figure out whether revenge buying will stop after the checks stop, right? And I think one of the things that you will see is one of the biggest propellers of growth, especially from the retail sector, has been the luxury consumer, right? And I'm not talking about the 1% of luxury consumer who spent, you know, no matter what, right? I'm not talking about the bling empire people, right? I'm talking about the next 2-5%. And it looks like people have come out of this pandemic and said, you know what, I've just gone through a really crazy experience and it doesn't seem like it's stopping anytime soon. So what I'm going to do is, instead of saving for tomorrow, I'm actually going to take care of myself today. And I think we're seeing this in various ways. We're seeing this in travel. People are going out of the way to travel. Airports are full, flights are full, you know, places are full, right? We're almost back even to the levels are higher than the pre-pandemic levels, right? So that's number one. We're seeing it in what people are looking for in terms of experiences. So when they go to these places, they're looking for all-inclusive spas, they're looking for luxurious settings, right? And then, of course, we're looking at it in products. So perfumes was the one that really propelled growth as far as the makeup, you know, the cosmetic industry is concerned. Is the luxury consumer who's buying the $30 lipsticks and the $48 mascaras, right? If you really look at it, I think the consumer has realized that I have gone through a life-changing experience. I am still here. I've survived this. I have seen death. I have seen what's been happening. I saw the world come to a standstill, which most people haven't seen in 100 years. And so I am going to take care of myself. And by take care of myself, I don't mean I'm going to buy that extra latte with extra foam on top. I'm just going to go all 9 yards on it, right? And I'm going to make sure that I have a good time without waiting for tomorrow. Now, a lot of people are saying that's what's causing inflation. A lot of people are saying that's what's causing issues. But really, if you take a step back, I think there's so many opportunities to make this person who has come out of this horrible experience feel good. And by feel good, I mean there are opportunities in mind and body and soul. And in all these things, you need to look at what is the luxurious experience of yoga, the luxurious experience of maybe a fine and dining, right? A luxurious experience of retail, a luxurious experience of buying. And I think that is where the metaverse comes in.
Yes, I'm so glad you naturally got to this because retail therapy is a thing for a reason. Yeah. But you said feel good. And I'm sitting here like, oh, the neuroscience, you know, the dopamine, the serotonin, the oxytocin, all the things that happen when you have an experience. So it's not just like consumer in a transaction and a product or a service. It is truly the feeling that I'm getting from this experience. So what experience can you create? Because that's where behavior management comes into play. When you can tap into someone's emotions and you can get that amygdala to calm down, get their prefrontal cortex to be focused a little bit more, and you get all that dopamine and serotonin going, people just feel calm and they feel a sense of peace and a sense of ease. And so if you can do that through, I'm going to use my own example one more time, Gucci. So during COVID, Saint Laurent out here in Dallas, Highland Park Village, were delivering your purses or your bags to your homes. So you could have that relationship. And I literally is one of my most cherished bags. And I will never forget this when I talk to great, great grand nieces and nephews about our version of the bubonic plague. I had this, which is almost like a Veblen good for me. And I don't know if our consumers even know that Chanel's and certain bags hold their values and increase in value over time. So Veblen goods as a status symbol, as a sense of power, as a sense of control, actually does mean something to a retailer. So it was one story that I was thinking of as you were speaking. And then the other one, Gucci is one of my favorite ones, not just for luxury makeup, but just the quality of the material of the shoes and things like that. And I was on the site last year and I saw the Gucci vault. And there's NFTs and there's art and there's avatars. And I thought, oh my gosh, I wasn't interested in the metaverse before, but maybe now I should be. Can you explain to our listeners what is happening there? And what even does the metaverse mean to the average luxury or retail buyer?
You know, I'm not claiming to be any expert in the metaverse, right? So you and I are probably learning at the same level. And I think my teenage kids are probably there faster, right? So one of them lives on TikTok and the other one lives on Discord, right? I don't think they live in real worlds anymore. So they're already in Discordverse and, you know, TikTokverse, right? So talking about the metaverse, I think the 5G technology is just going to open it up for us, right? So we're going to be more immersive. We're going to have real experiences. It's a little bit like how far movie making and movie viewing has come, right? So, you know, we got so used to the 4K. We got so used to hearing good sound. We got so used to hearing nuances that we never knew. We never knew what we missed till we got a better experience. So I think we're all moving towards better experiences. And just a few hours ago, I was talking about the metaverse and inclusivity. I actually want to take this opportunity to talk about the metaverse and exclusivity. And I know I'm going to sound terrible while saying this, but I have to tell you, when I walk into a store and I walk into a high-end brand, I want to feel exclusive. And I will give you an experience. I was in Miami and, you know, we literally had an hour before I was supposed to go to the airport. And it was a 3-day conference. I had not had the opportunity to get out of my hotel. So this was literally across the street. And I walked in and there were 3 people with me and there was a Bottega store. And I said, oh, I really have to introduce you to Bottega. I love Bottega. I love what they do with leather. I love that little weave that they do. Come. There were 2 girls who were sitting there. There were 2 girls and standing exactly. As you can't see us on video, I'm seeing exactly because Missy is showing me her Bottega shoe. Exactly. And I love it. First of all, was shoes, right? Passion, stereotypical name. But more importantly, right, they've gone into this high-end mall and made this little store, which, by the way, on paper must have looked brilliant because it must have been like, we will take our top heels and top shoes and display them. Everybody will have a chance to touch them. It will seem very seamless. It'll seem very immersive. Let me tell you what really happens. So I walk in. There are these 2 women standing there. So I introduced these 2 women who were with me who had earlier introduced them to Chanel. And I'm like, come, I want you to see Bottega. Like, look at this sandal. This is amazing. And I go there and touch it and pick it up for them to feel how soft leather can be. And I told them that this weave is their DNA. This is how you know it's a Bottega, right? It's on their bags, it's on their shoes. I looked at these two girls standing there and none of them came up to tell me why that sandal was amazing. None of them came up to say, well, hello, yes, you know, it's so nice that you know this brand. Can I tell you a little bit more? This color is the color of the year. This has been inspired by Pantone. Bottega's whole theme is this. Nothing. Finally, to engage them, because remember, I'm the one saving brands. Finally, to save them, I said, hey, I mean, how much does this cost? And they came there and said, oh, it's $2,600. And then they walked away. And I'm like, yay. Fail, right? That's exactly what I mean. This is not information that you would find on an Excel sheet or in a report. This is only information that you would find if you take the pains to walk the stores. This is experience number one. Now, let me tell you a second one. Remember, I told you I have a signature perfume, Coco Noir, and I walked in and, you know, this friend of mine and colleague wanted to experience Chanel. So luckily, there was a Chanel store. I said, come, smell this. And she smelled it, and there was someone with makeup, and they helped do the makeup and all of that. But the point is this, right? If you said, Annika, you love this perfume so much, describe this perfume to me, tell me. And I know, because when I used to, you know, handle Unilever, we used to deal with Firmenich, and Firmenich is one of those perfume companies, right? That does high notes, middle notes, low notes, right? Oh, the yes. Wood rose and this and a hint of Germaine and whatever. Doesn't mean anything to me. Smells great. But the point is, if you told me, Annika, why do you like Coco Noir? You know, what's in it? I can't describe it to you. Now, I wish I could have walked into the Chanel store and had this immersive experience where this perfume comes to life. QR codes have come back with a vengeance. We didn't know in the Americas what a QR code was. It was such an Asian phenomenon till COVID happened, correct? Now, the point is, here is a little technology. I don't even have to download an app anymore. Why can't brands use these opportunities to bring this to life? It was a simple opportunity of taking this woman who is obsessed and passionate about this. It's an expensive perfume, right? She's a loyalist, which again, in this day and age, you don't have enough people in New York to look for loyalists, right? So if that is the case, why can't this brand use this opportunity to bring this to life, right? So I want to come back to the metaverse and say, if the stores are not getting it right, and if it's just too much of an uphill to tell people you need to give better retail experiences to people who are spending money with you, right, then what you need to do is make sure that perhaps you can come to the metaverse and get it right. Because you're not undoing anything, you're doing. So coming back to my concept, and again, this sounds horrible. It sounds like revenge buying, saying, I'm going to buy the $10,000 bag and you're not going to say no to me. But I do want to talk about the metaverse and say, you know what? You give me that exclusive experience that I want. Show me how that red lipstick looks on me, right? Show me what how that dress will look on me. So that I'm not walking into another place to try it on with five other people in line, yes. Because that's not what I'm expecting when I'm buying a Prada dress.
So the metaverse being a virtual reality that can give you a better real experience than you probably could get in reality.
No, I would actually move it. I would say, give me a space where you make me feel like you are in love with me.
Yes.
Make me feel like you have eyes only for me. Make me feel like you are so glad I came here. Because that is what you do to a person who is a brand loyalist, right? Mm-hmm. Bring this to life. So fine, you can't create a garden in every this to show what that perfume is like whether it's Dior, Prada, Chanel. Fine, create it for me in the metaverse.
Yeah.
So I think the metaverse would be such a great way to say, Annika, boy, I'd be happy to see you. And we're going to find five ways to show you that. And I think that is what the brands do it. This luxury consumer will be so loyal. They will continue to spend. They will be 5% of your audience, but perhaps maybe more than 80% of your revenue, right? And that is why it makes sense, not just to find them, but to hold on to them. I think that is where the metaverse can make a difference, right? It took me, Missy, more than 40 years of my life to have the guts to wear red lipstick.
So I was told by an ill-advised person, but actually was well-advised for the role in the company that I was in, the culture, that I was too scary, too dominant, too direct. If I wore red blazer or red dress or the red lip, it looked like war paint on me. And I did it for a while. But thank you for acknowledging it today.
It took me 40 years to have the guts to wear red. A best friend of mine wears red. And she was shocked when I told her this. But the point is, in the metaverse, if I were a lot younger, I could have just tried that on and seen how it looks on my avatar and build up that confidence and come back in real life, right? Maybe I might not wear a neon pink because there's a certain dress code that is expected from me because of my persona in real life. But hey, if I can rock neon pink or neon green in the metaverse, why the hell not? So my point is, I want to feel liberated. I want to feel special. I want to feel like I am so important for you that you created an entire world for me. And I do believe that the top 5% of your consumers, not the 1%, right? The 2 to 5% of your consumers will pay back rich dividends if you are able to get this right. So I think if you ask me, Anika, what can the metaverse do for the luxury consumer, especially for makeup? I think the metaverse can create the right retail experience for this consumer and try and create it to the hyper-personalization of one. This person comes in, feels it, you give them a one-on-one consultation. They don't feel like they're being bombarded like the Macy's stores where all the perfumes are in one area and everyone's walking around with these swatches and they're trying to get you. That is not a luxury experience. That is just a shopping experience, right? That's just pushing the stuff to you experience, right? The good news is so many brands and companies are doing it wrong today that the potential is huge. I think that is where marketers need to come in and use tech and data to enable it, right? Data should tell you Anika is going to buy and Anika continues to buy. And tech should enable that hyper-personalization store of one for Anika. And I'm telling you, you get your Anikas right, Anika will not leave anytime soon.
I love it. I have a few more questions, but I do these word clouds. And some of the things that are just jumping out to me is the ROI of revenge buying. Liberation through luxury.
Yes.
Obviously, product teams that are human-centric in a market-oriented organization. Tech-enabled, but consumer-driven. And then, of course, just all my favorite brands on here. YOLO, retail therapy, exclusive versus all-inclusive.
I hate to admit it. What I'm doing this weekend is building an end-to-end closet. And I told the person who's building it, I might need another one for shoes.
So, like, out of the square footage of your dwelling space, what percentage of your space is dedicated to the closet's one thing, like the clothes, the shoes, the bags. But then do you have one of those beautifully organized makeup cabinets and vanities? And
not yet, but I'm getting there. The brands are all there. The products are all there. The categories are all there. I just need the right space now. So not yet.
Lovely. I think this is such a great topic for women in digital. Not that any gender can or cannot indulge in luxury products and makeup and skincare and everything, but it just creates a great space for us to give voice as a network resource group or an enterprise resource group to advise and consult and coach and be there on those technology teams. So,
you know, I would tell women in digital to take a leaf out of your book, Missy. And I say this to my students all the time. Listen, you need to bring your consumer hat. If it's not working for you, do not think that just because you put it on a PowerPoint, it's going to work for somebody else, right? So the lesson that I want them to take out of your hat, for example, is the fact that you embrace yourself as a consumer, right? If you're passionate about brands, you're passionate about a product, you're passionate about a color, you flaunt it, you wear it, you walk it, and hopefully the people who ask you are only the ones that you know about who are inspired by you. But imagine the hundreds of others who've just seen you somewhere and said, hey, I can do it as well. So if you were to ask me and say, Anika, what is your I wish? I would say, I wish more women in digital embrace their consumer selves, right? Because when you talk about human-centric, you cannot be women in digital and tech and not humanize it yourself, right? So if you're trying to solve a problem, if you're trying to do something, you're trying to read data, you're trying to troubleshoot something in another zone or another market, put on your consumer hats and say, listen, last time I checked, you're trying to reach me. This doesn't make sense. So let's see how we can make sense of it. And I think if you just humanize the room with something like this, it will just humanize the entire experience. Again, that's my third lesson for today, or aha moment. I do believe it'll make sense. Women in digital, embrace your women self and then embrace your digital self and bring the two together would be my thought.
Mic drop. Any other thing you want to hit on before we wrap up? This has been amazing conversation and we could probably go on and on and on.
No, I think, you know, like I said, you know, make sure that your organizations are market oriented to find out who the people who matter most, right? You would do it in a family, right? Say, hey, the mother-in-law really matters a lot. Make sure that you give her extra love. How different is that from your loyal consumers, right? Not that I want to compare loyal consumers to mother-in-laws, but I meant give them the love, give them the notice, make sure that they feel heard and seen. Data will do that for you. And then I do believe that as we continue to discuss the future of retail and the future of the store, instead of, you know, boiling the ocean on that front, there is an opportunity in the metaverse to get this right and to see whether it can work. So digital will allow you to fail and fail faster and get it right and then try it out and see whether it works. I mean, papers and papers and papers for many years would be written on the short-term and the long-term effects of the pandemic, especially on consumer behavior, right? So here is somebody who's telling you, listen, I've just gone through a terrible experience. I want to feel special. I want to feel good. I'm getting into cruise ships. I'm getting into airports. I'm getting into luxury experiences because I want to feel special. I do believe there's an opportunity here for companies and brands to answer to that across categories. So it's a conversation, Missy. Thank you so much for including me, but one that I believe should continue to resonate. This is not a one-off thing, right? This is, people should be talking about it at bus stops, to random people.
I actually heard something back when I was selling like Mary Kay or Avon, probably over 25 years ago in college. It was like during a recession, the two areas that never actually saw a drop was cosmetics and alcohol.
America got it right, because during the pandemic, alcohol continued to be here and we continued to see a huge boom in e-commerce, right? So if you look at it, it explains the fact that people could shop. And I do believe the amount of people that came up with virtual try-on, the impact, the push on e-commerce, right, across categories happened because people were sitting at home. So everybody still wanted to shop because we had money. So I do believe you're absolutely right. I don't think too much has changed, Missy, in the last 25 years.
Not in my life in the last 25 years. All right. Well, thank you so much. I cannot wait to get this episode live and dish all about this with our co-hosts. So thank you so much, Amrita.
That was quite the interview, Missy.
Yes.
Oh, she was.
Well, I'll tell you, I used to work in retail in the back end, and I loved how she took it from here's where we talk about designers and perfumes and all that great stuff. And then she takes it right into the data. So that was my point of view. Was like, I thought, oh, we're going to have a conversation about designer brands. No, we went right into like, it was so smart the way she did it. And I was really impressed.
Yeah. You know, I thought too that, and how data is so important today coming out of COVID, right? The consumer is changing. Their state of mind is changing. The reason why they want to use luxury brands has been evolving based on the journey that we just had over the last 2 to 3 years. And to be on top of that, to understand that data, to be able to think ahead of where they're going versus being a laggard, I thought was just really cool. And the role that she has played in helping to get that forward.
Yeah. You know how much I love cosmetics? Red Lip Friday, like my signature, and fashion.
By the way, for our listeners, Missy looks fabulous, and Lois and I look like we just came from the grocery store. Just saying that. Go ahead, Missy. Not that I would expect anything different.
And so I thought about how scared everyone is, or not everyone, but most people feel who are in technology about automation. And AI, and is my job going away? So then I wondered, in terms of retail, are retailers scared about people coming into stores less and e-commerce and shopping online more? And what's the metaverse going to do for retail employers and that workforce? And I think it was really cool to hear that something as personal as cosmetics and fashion, where you think you need high touch, can actually leverage data. And that can help them think about how they're going to leverage the metaverse to create an uber personalized and a hyper personalized experience for people. And it's mind boggling, because I'm just I mean, I was probably one of the last people to start even using Amazon. Like, what? You can get what in 2 hours? But I need to build a car and feel it. Like, I'm tactile that way. And with cosmetics, you're like, wait, what? You want me to buy my foundation versus something I'm seeing online? But this is next generation. And a lot of people are born digital. It's just like my mind's blown. But I get it. I can see it.
What was she saying about the 2-5% payback on a metaverse created for individuals? I thought that was amazing, and how brands are really catching up with tech.
Yes.
and social media. It was like tech and social media to reach out to some younger audiences. I thought that was really just a really smart way to look at what the data and what are the insights we're learning from this thing, and then how do the brands use this information? So.
Yeah.
And it really, we see it today, right? I mean, we just saw another big retailer closing its doors. And I think those who are really smart, forward thinking, how they're going to engage their consumers are the ones that are going to survive, right? They're thinking about how to use the latest in tech, because that's frankly where everybody is going. We're not going to be walking in the front door anymore of a real place. We're going to be utilizing lots of avenues to be able to understand the product, engage with it, and make a buying decision. So that was amazing.
Oh, I was just going to say, there's also the better experience when she talks about exclusivity as well as inclusivity. That was a really important distinction, and the experience of the store. But she talks about, this is something that is exclusive, but they're bringing more people to the table. I think that's what she was saying, Missy.
Absolutely. But even if you think about the data that they're using to make things more inclusive, like shades or complexions for makeup, being able to have, you know, AI look at and mirror and match you instantly, right? And then they can even say, maybe this shade isn't quite right. And then that data goes back. So it's a feedback loop from a product development perspective where it's inclusive that way. And then people will pay big bucks for a solution, like a problem that they've had, like, if someone could figure out how I can not tweeze my chin hairs every day, like, that would be amazing. All right. I would pay top dollar for that.
Getting so real right now. Lois, you got anything else to add? Because I do want to.
I have nothing else. But yeah, I think, Jeannie, we should unfortunately, but fortunately, talk about, this is Missy's last time we're going to be chatting with her as an outro.
Yeah, we're excited for Missy. Oh, I know has a lot of great opportunities. Missy, tell us, we're going to miss you, but tell us what you're thinking about, what you're up to.
I know, I'm getting teary-eyed now, so bear with me. But I'm really excited because I've launched my own company, Transform Maven LLC, and I'm just going to bring the human side of digital to life. Y'all know how much I geek out about culture.
Absolutely.
Org design and the human side of cyber, the human side of AI, the human side of cloud. I want to nail that in. I've got a couple clients already, actually, and I'm just super freaking stoked. And I, you know, I was actually encouraged by a couple mentors and peers at ISG to start, Missy, start your human side podcast, you know, finish writing a book. I need to finish writing that book. So just having the time and the space to do deep work and really get this out and into the world, I could not be more excited, and things are just lining up so smoothly. And
I'm so proud of you, Missy. I'm so happy for you.
Yeah.
Terrifying at the same time.
Yeah, I just.
Well, we're here to support you.
Absolutely. And it is inspiring. You know, I think to have those times in life, I think, you know, when we think about, there are instrumental times in our life that we can go off and do something else that's just really our passion. And it's so exciting to hear, Missy, and I'm so thrilled for you. So, you know, we got you, and we're going to have you come back. You know what? Missy's going to have to be a guest and hear and keep touch of what you have going on, because it's exciting.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So do you have an email or a website you want to post? Tell us what it is. Say it out there so we can have it.
Thank you. Yeah, it's Transform Maven, one word, two M's, transformmaven.com. And my email is missy@transformmaven.com. Pretty simple. The same Instagram, Twitter, everything @transformmaven. So.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, I'm excited. I'm so excited for you, but we're going to miss you. And I'm sure our audience will too.
Absolutely.
Thank you. for everything. Thanks, everybody. Well, we've got a couple more interviews that Missy has done with us, so you won't entirely lose Missy's voice for a while. For a little bit. Through the summer. You'll get us through the summer.
That's a good lead into one of the future episodes on voice.
Ah, very good. It is. All right. Well, it was good to talk to you guys. I'm so glad we could catch up.
Yeah.
And great job, Missy, on the interview. Fabulous.
Hi.
Thanks for listening. If you like our podcast, please subscribe and rate and review us. Thank you.